Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Is up, Wizards fans. Welcome to another Believe in Wizards podcast. We're back after a little break here. Honestly, the Wizards need a break from us. We need a little break from them. We've still been watching, so we'll catch you up on where we're at. But first of all, before we get going, Jihadi, how's things? How's life? How are you?
Oh, life's good, man. Life's good. Just enjoying it. You know, doing a little traveling. Basketball, high school basketball season is finally over, so I get a little bit of life for myself, and I'm taking it.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I've been following on Instagram there. It looks like some good trips, so I'm a little jealous, but I don't blame you. Before we get going, let's just knock out our ad reads. Brought to you by Stateside Vodka and their Surfside Hard Iced Teas, our lemonades, our half and halves. They're all delicious. And BetOnline, it's your number one source for all your betting needs. Get the latest odds, lines, and match reports for baseball, boxing, golf, UFC, women's March Madness, men's March Madness, NBA, whatever you want to bet on. Probably have bet on the G League playoffs. We'll get to that here in a little bit. Probably smart to always bet against a Wizards team at any level, but we'll talk about it. But yeah, go to the website, use your mobile device, and use our promo code BELIEVE, B-L-E-A-V, for 50% off welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online where the game starts. All right, so we're limping our way to the finish line here of the NBA season. The Wizards are 15-62, which is just kind of punched me in the stomach to say that out loud. You're coming off a split between the Bucks and Lakers. Overall, not too bad. I guess just anything you've seen lately, Jihadi, that's worth talking about. I got a couple things for you here, but just want to give you kind of a first opportunity to react to anything you've seen on the court so far.
Tristan Vucevic.
Yeah, that's where I would have gone to. I think that's a good call.
I'm glad to see we have a type of player like he is, and we really don't even know the type of player he is yet.
Sure.
Because every time I watch him, I see something else that how far his game has actually expanded, what he can do. You know, he's not a one-dimensional player, mm-hmm. not a typical big. He's not a typical three-point shooter. He's not a typical facilitator.
Yep.
Right? Rebounder, not bad. But what I like to see is that we get a player like that at this time in the season. Reason That's being cool. is, the pressure is off of him. He's still pressured to show up and sure. prove. But all of the pressure that came throughout the season, the up and down, the adversity, the things that can affect the player's play, affect the player's mental, can affect the player's drive, he bypassed all of that. Right? Yeah, now, almost in the season to where you don't really have to, everybody can just gel and play because you're not playing for anything. Mm-hmm. So now you're getting to see more freer players, more intense players, right. More players being able to be naturally just playing their game. Mm-hmm. He gets to come during that time and really fill in well. Not only fill in well, but make a surprising impact.
Mm-hmm. The passing is the piece that I didn't see at all when I watched sort of pre-draft tape. He's thrown a couple like really savvy passes, but also One, he's not afraid to shoot it if he gets a good look, but if he doesn't, he also makes the right pass, and that's sort of more of that European upbringing, I think, and what you talked about early in the year with Koulibaly, and we've seen it with Denny. Like, the ball movement with them on the court together is really good, and having more of those kind of players out on the court, I think, is only going to serve you in the long run here.
I think Denny and Kispert really both work well with him. He's not noticing the open player.
Mm-hmm.
He's noticing where the open player can be.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and so he's more advanced than just a regular facilitator. That's why I say he's just not a facilitator. Mm-hmm. Right. He's noticing a guy. Okay. I see. If I catch it here, I know Denny is about to cut, or Corey's about to cut. Okay. So if he cuts too short, then that pass is going to get taken. So I'm going to pass it to where he has an extended cut, and now he has to go get it. Now he's right there with it. He's setting you up for easy money.
Yeah, he had one to Corey that, like, fed him right to the hoop, and, like, all Corey had to do was, like, scoop it.
I'm telling you, man, like, these European players, I hate to say it, hey, they make – it's hard to not want the game to go, the NBA game to go to how they're playing.
Yeah, it's more fun to watch.
It's fun to watch. It's more team ball.
Mm-hmm.
It's less selfish, but it's also like, oh, why don't we teach that to our players? Why don't we say pass to the spot where you want him to go, and to the spot where, instead of the spot that where he's going to be? Right.
Yeah.
Now, as a cutter, I'm gonna have to change my cuts a little bit. I may have to slow them down, speed them up. I may have to have an extended cut.
Mm-hmm.
But that's another player teaching you that, right? And and what it is just making your game, what it does is make it, it opens up the floor. It makes everybody's game easier. It makes everybody able to score easier. So now when I have to go into my bag of just everything I do normally, I already got like 10 points.
And I think the more continuity they all have together, the better that's going to look, too. I mean, this is in, like, we're just throwing you all together, and they're kind of, like, figuring it out and trying to do the right things, and it's just working out. Like, once you've got a real sense for who can be where, who can get what passes, who likes the ball where, it just gets, it gets a lot easier, I think, too. So I'm looking forward to that. Just on the European basketball and their players, like, somebody's got to tell our guy Gilbert Arenas about that. I don't know if you saw this one.
MVP?
Yeah, come on, man. It's just such a stupid take. I love the man, but just we gotta, he hates European basketball players so much. There's no, like, he was killing Giannis. He was just the week before the Kenyon Martin saying how much better Kyrie is than Luka, and Gilbert agreeing with him. I was just like, we're now killing the two-time MVP because statistics. Like, oh, that was a tough listen.
In the end of the day, the MVP is the best player that year.
Yeah, right. The end.
Who's in denial that Jokic is the best player that year? To me, the only other person that you could really say, okay, that he may be getting cheated a little bit, is Jason Tatum.
Tatum's getting a little underrated, I think, overall.
Yeah, like,
Embiid was... had an argument one of those 2 years.
He had a really big argument, yeah.
You know, Giannis maybe had an argument one of those 2 years. But these are guys that are all in the discussion. It's not like, you're propping Jokic up over, like, prime Kareem Abdul-Jabbar or something. It's just...
Jokic is making the biggest impact.
Yeah.
But also, he's making the biggest impact in a unicorn type of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's why, he's so impressive. That's why he's MVP. Right. Because he's doing amazing things that he's defying the odds of the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how it's played, how, with not very much, I mean, just like Luka, with not very much athletic ability.
Yeah. Yeah, he just makes it work. He's got good pace, got good, body control. Like, all those things are huge and underrated.
He can see the entire court, he can see behind his head. Yeah. He shoots crazy shots at the buzzer that looked like it's awkward, that definitely shouldn't look like they go in, but he's done it so many times, it's something that he works on, is actually something he does. So when you see when you're used to the NBA game being one way,
it's hard to change.
And a player comes and just defy all the odds, it completely flips it on his head.
Mm-hmm.
You have to pay attention to it. Not only when he does that, he's successful at it. He's a big that's 7 foot?
Yeah, I think he's 7 footer. Yeah.
He's dribbling, he's running point. Everything flows through him.
He can't block a shot. Yeah.
Can't block a shot. Strong. I mean, powerful. Oh, name me another guy. I haven't seen a guy like Jokic since the bonus.
And yeah, I'm talking about the dad, yeah.
Senior.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Right. And if Sabonis played in this time where the game has advanced, his game would naturally have to advance to the version of how Jokic is playing now.
Yeah, I think so too.
But that's the only other player I actually that could do what Jokic could do.
Yeah, at that size, you don't see that combination of things very often. And I think good players, they can adapt their game to any pace the game is being played at. The great players make everyone else play at their pace. And I think that's what you see Jokic do.
Yep.
All right. That's one European player taken in the second round during a Taco Bell commercial. Let's go back to our European player taken in the second round. With Vucevic, Noel in the chat asked, how good can Vucevic be? Like, what's the ceiling for a player like that?
He doesn't have one. Because right now, what is he, 19?
I think, 20, something like that.
So just imagine how young he is and how advanced he is now. Yeah. Right? So, but we also understand that he's already been a pro. Right.
Yeah, get a little head start there.
Understand how comfortable he is out there.
Mm-hmm.
Like when he's playing, it doesn't seem like his first NBA game or second NBA. Even the way he reacts to a made shot or reacts to something well he does. He's already doing the gestures and everything. Mm-hmm. Right. Most players that just came in their second, third, fourth day on the
team. Still learning all that.
Well, they're too.
Or too shy to do it still.
Too shy to do it and not sure if they should do it or not.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They had to learn a team, but maybe GM don't like me, you know, going through all the things.
What's the vibe here? Yeah.
Yeah, what's the vibe trying to fill it out? All of that's gone. He's playing his game.
Mm-hmm.
He's enjoying himself. And he's pretty much, when he's out there, he's pretty much leading our offense. Because everything is pretty much going through him because he's seeing so many things.
Yeah, I mean, it's still like a small sample size, but I've liked what we've seen on that end. The problem is in that equally small sample size, I have not liked what we've seen on the other end. He looks real slow to me, and him trying to block shots, I've seen a couple where he's been totally flat-footed, like both heels on the ground trying to block someone else's shot, and I get like trying to be vertical and stuff, but if you're trying to like weak side shot block without jumping, I really don't know what the point is at this point.
I've seen him jump for a few block shots where I know he can't get off the ground.
Okay. That's cool.
Right. He didn't get him.
Yeah.
The timing was off, but he was off the ground.
Okay. That's good.
He doesn't really want to be too physical defensively, but I think that's the part of the game where you're going every night, you're going to have to face a monster.
Sure.
All right. You're facing monsters every night. You're going to have to adjust no matter what. These aren't the same type of players you are to where they can, you know, stretch the floor. So with a Giannis or with a KD, you're going to have to stretch. You're going to have to stand your ground.
Yeah. At least make them work for it a little.
So, I'm not sure if he's played against players like that yet.
No, probably not. I'm not many at least.
He's young enough to where he can grow into that part. So yeah. I think the ceiling is very high for him. Just seeing him now, you know, I'm surprised the Wizards didn't bring him over earlier. I'm glad they didn't. But you know, it's kind of weird to see a player like him just sitting around.
Yeah.
We're not sitting around, but not here.
Right. The other challenge with that too is it's been kind of reported that based on how they brought him over and the structure of the contract coming this point in the season, they'll probably have to renegotiate his sort of real deal with him this offseason. And now he's looking really good. You may have just cost yourself some long-term money by waiting to do it this way. So I don't really love that move from the Wizards, although at this point in their rebuild, they may not even care about a couple of $1 million here or there for someone like Vucevic. So, you know, I don't know. We'll see. Maybe they'll say it's not enough sample size to factor into the logic of the trade demand or the contract demands here, but not the savviest move in my opinion. I don't know.
Yeah. It's probably one of the smartest way. And in that case, it's, you know, you're spec differently from the new organization that we have, like, you know, people up top.
Sure.
But
it happens.
I don't think they expected to get what they got either.
Yeah, probably. You're probably right. Nobody thought he was going to come over and put up 15 points, you know, in his second start or his first real start.
They expected to get that. You know, and then when I like the Bagley, the 1-2 with him and Bagley, especially mm-hmm. Bagley as a backup to him.
Yeah.
That's not bad. I still don't know how I feel about giving away Gafford.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if Gafford would have been a better 1-2 with him or Bagley. You know, I think that if you had Gafford him and Gafford on the floor together would really be a good move.
You're stretching the floor a little bit and get some space.
Before you got rid of Gafford, that should have been something that you could have brought him over and tested out.
Yeah. No, for sure. I'm with you. The Bagley one is tough because he's been pretty good when he's played. It's just the same kind of things popping up. Can't stay on the floor again. It's meant more Rashawn Holmes than I think they probably would have liked. And he's been fine. Like, if he's your third big guy, I don't really actually have a problem with that. Yeah. But, you know, it's... He's not a real needle mover, let's put it that way, at least. For anybody that hasn't seen it, Vucevic, first career start last night against the Lakers, 15 points, 5-9 shooting, 3-6 from 3, 3 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 block. And the game before that against Milwaukee, he had 14 points, 7 rebounds, 3 assists, and played 31 minutes. The 31 minutes is my favorite of all those really good stats. And to be honest with you, every time I see someone like Anthony Gill on the court at this point in the season, it fills me with rage. It's not a personal attack on Anthony Gill. It's just he doesn't need to be getting 26 minutes at this point in the year. Like, just play literally everyone under age 25. Like, Patrick Baldwin should get every Anthony Gill moment, you know, minute, and you figure out what you have in these young guys.
Yeah, I agree with that. Because, I mean, honestly, Anthony Gill is – I like his energy. I like his energy. I like, that's about it. I can give you right now. I like his energy. I like his energy. I like his leadership. I like the way he talks. I like the way he helps the players out. But I don't see him moving any needle.
No.
I don't see him doing one thing impactful other than running the floor, which makes a player his size have to run to, right? But, you know, those minutes should go to Baldwin and the guys that you can really test out.
If you had done it,
Gill's not going to work himself into a bigger, better contract.
Yeah. If anything, his career's on the way down at this point. I say this as a 35-year-old, but as a 30-year-old, he's hit the peak of his powers probably at this point. Whereas, Champagne or any of these other guys, even Amarui, like there's still more to see if you can scale him up. Okay, he played 8 minutes. Can he play 15? Okay, play 15. Can he play 20? And then you go in the next year with sort of like a full accounting, you know, of what each of these guys can kind of give you, and or at least a better accounting. And with him, there's nothing Gill is going to show you that you haven't already seen. And he's not making anyone else's lives easier. So it's not like you're getting a better evaluation by playing him out there next to some of these younger guys. I just don't really get the logic behind that.
I don't know if it's his experience or is it because he's a bigger body or because he's active.
Mm-hmm.
But
probably a little bit of both.
I think Gill is good being out there for Vucevic. Reason being is, he's helping Vucevic through all the play series at that moment, right?
Being assistant coach on the floor, basically.
Yeah, so other than that, that's probably, I see a need for Gil to be out there. Mm-hmm. Also, Vucevic is not the best rebounder.
Yep, that's true.
So, you know, you probably need a bigger rebounding tandem.
Mm-hmm.
When Kuzma's not in the game.
Makes sense.
But, yeah, like you said, he's pretty much at his peak at 30 years old.
Yeah, I think so. Wiggs Gaming asked us, should we draft a center? He said not named Alex Saar. Based off Tristan's play, if Saar isn't available, I'd argue we should give the reins to Vucevic. He looks so comfortable offensively. He just needs to learn to defend without fouling. So I guess just simplifying the question here a little bit, would what you've seen from Vucevic impact your drafting strategy at all in any way?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Reason being is, right now, Vucevic, to me, you can make him into a poor man's Porzingis.
Like that.
Right. But with mm-hmm. more facilitator qualities. Which means you're still going to need a big body out there with him.
Sure.
Right. So Kuzma is a big body that can rebound.
Yeah. Denny can a little bit for you, too.
Denny can a little bit, but you need a body who can absorb some impact and give some impact.
Yeah, and you keep doing more on the perimeter. Yeah.
Right. But you need an active body who can move, can slash downhill.
Mm-hmm.
Reason being is after looking at him, the Wizards, when it's five out in that floor spread,
mm-hmm.
they look very good.
Yeah.
So you want to be able to draw whoever big that you're playing against that day out.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't bring another big that plays inside, another big body that plays inside. It has to be a guy who can be a good slash. It's comfortable being in the perimeter, but also can be an anchor for a defense that can rebound.
Mm-hmm.
So yes. I think you still go get another big body, but you don't get it. To back up Vucevic or play in front of him, you get it to play alongside of
him. And I think you just take talented guys at this point. If the next guy up on your board is a big, you take him and you figure that shit out later. We're years away from needing to figure out, you know, like the who's on the final roster by the time we're good again. I think that's that'd be a nice problem to have, but you need all the talent you can get here. The other thing with Vucevic too, it's been since Porzingis, like I guess a Gallinari and Muscala, you know, did a little bit in the year, but you haven't really had like a stretch big that could play real minutes this season. And I think that's actually impacted Poole a little bit because you've seen him be able to get like some easier shots the last couple games. Like when he's dancing, he's actually like kind of getting somewhere a little bit more now because people can't cheat off of Bagley or cheat off of Gafford or cheat off of Holmes. Like, if you've got Vucevic who could shoot it in a corner, you've created just that little bit of extra space. And then Poole can sort of drive and kick if the defender can't cheat quite as much. He's getting guys more on their heels and it's lead to like slightly better shots for him. I don't think I'll ever be a fan of the Jordan Poole in Washington experience personally, but I've seen a few things that make me think that maybe that's a help for him is to just, if he can't naturally create that space for himself, like at least maybe the other guys can.
I didn't think that I could be a Jordan Poole and Washington fan either because I thought he was too stubborn-headed to be mm-hmm. able to accept change or try to make a change,
mm-hmm.
try to be a more poised player.
Yeah.
But these last two games, I like the Poole I'm seeing. I like that he's taking time. It seems like he's realizing the more I give up the ball,
mm-hmm.
the more I get it. And when I get it, I'm in better positions, right? I'm not going to shoot a quick rush step back shot.
Sure.
I'm going to shoot a wide open shot,
mm-hmm.
right? And the way that I'm realizing I'm getting wide open shots, which those are the ones I'm hitting.
Yep.
And he's hitting them consistently, doing a good job. Is because now you have to respect every other player. So let me learn how to make the team respect every other player.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm getting easy, wide open things. That's just the same way. Like, remember when I said that Vucevic is given, pretty much giving certain players 10 points before they even play their game?
Yeah, that's one of them.
Well, that's the same thing that's happening to Poole by him facilitating, getting everybody open, getting everybody involved. Mm-hmm. Now he's giving himself 10 points easy before he has to really even go into his bag.
Yep.
So I like this Poole that I'm seeing lately. He's more poised. He's more, I see him, and I didn't realize he can really see the court like he can.
He's made a lot more like actual like play. He's created plays for other guys. And now there's still a lot of creating plays for the wrong team too, with some of the turnovers, but he's actually like, I can live with the turnovers if you're actually, you know, affecting a defense enough to like spoon feed a few easy baskets for other guys. Like, and to your point, like we didn't see much of that early in the year, I don't think.
Yeah, also on defense, he's playing the passing lanes a lot more. So he's creating a lot of turnovers for the other team.
I'll be honest, I just turn away whenever he's guarding the ball, especially. Off ball, like, not as bad, but on ball, it's like, all right, just do what you're going to do.
Man, we got to pay attention.
him on defense is tough for me.
Drives you crazy.
There are just certain things, and he's like a multi-year pro at this point, but he just seems like he would benefit from time in the weight room more than just about anybody I think I've seen in the last couple of years. Like, guys just move him so easily.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's an effort thing or just doesn't have the physical strength to do it, but
I think it's an excuse thing.
Yeah, could be.
Right? Like, the excuse is, well, he moved me all the way. Like, that's
right.
A person who literally only likes one side of the court.
Mm-hmm.
Will have any excuse to not. So a screen, he's going to always get caught on the screen.
Yeah, he's dying on every screen, yeah.
Right. If somebody moves him out of the way, if I can fall, right, that's, no one's that weak.
Yeah.
No player out here is that weak.
Red Cocker asks in the chat, can you name a wizard that actually plays defense? And yeah, there are a couple, but that should be I know what he's trying to say, that they're not a ton of good defenders on this roster, but that should be even more to the point. When Poole stands out above and beyond as such a bad defender on a team full of bad defenders, that should be hammering the point home. Even
he'd be worse than worse.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. Over the last 10-ish games since Poole's been back as a starter, he's shooting about 43% from the field, 32.5% from three, making all his free throws, although not taking many of them. He's around like 5 or 6 assists and like 3-ish turnovers. So not the greatest, but again, there's been at least some more flashes. The problem is I've said this 2 or 3 times this year where I'll see 2 good games in a row and I'm like, yes, he's figuring it out. And then he will lay an absolute stinker in that third game. So just some amount of consistency, like I'd take slightly lower highs if we got, you know, a few lows that weren't quite as low. That's what I'd love to see from him more than anything next year, is just like finding more of a sweet spot. Like Denny is kind of what Denny is. And you're going to get 18 points, 8 rebounds, a couple assists, a steal, a block on reasonable volume, you know, like every single night he plays. And that's fine. Like, but you know what to expect from him. And the point about Poole, it applies to Kuzma too. Like, just if you're the 2 high usage veteran guys, you just have to be a little more dependable, I think, too.
Yeah, but I was the same way. I'm the same way. When I think he's trying to figure it out, he goes back to his old ways.
Right.
But I haven't seen this guy.
Yeah, that's fair.
Hopefully. I haven't seen this guy these last two games. This mm-hmm. is a new guy to me. I haven't seen this guy as poised and solid and really looking for as many options as you can.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what makes me say, okay, there had to be some type of epiphany there. Somebody got to him. Something out. Because I feel like he got it, or he's getting it now.
Mm-hmm.
Because tell me if I'm wrong, have you seen this guy before?
There's been a couple games where I've seen more of this, but I think like last night specifically, I cringed a lot less at some of the shot selection in that Bucks game. He still had a couple no yeses. Like there was one where he sort of like no looked Giannis from the left wing, and he made it, you know, to his credit. I think so. Some of the shots were still tough, but he made a few more of them in this Lakers game, especially though the shot diet was like, oh, okay. Yeah, like that's what I want you doing next year. So I'm with you there.
I agree.
For anybody that didn't get to watch this game, we're obviously talking about Poole having a better game. So just the stats behind it. He had 29 points of 10 of 19 shooting, 5 of 9 from 3. He had 5 assists, 2 rebounds, 2 steals. So, you know, more of that. Let's just say more of that. And the other person I think who's been really good here of the younger guys in the last couple of weeks has been Jared Butler. We've gotten some like really good, you know, young guy performances from him against Milwaukee. He had a season high 17 points. Butler was 7 of 10 from the field, 3 of 3 from 3. He had 3 assists, 3 rebounds, and 2 steals in only 18 minutes, which was awesome. And then in this Lakers game, not as great shooting the ball at 9 points, but he also had a team-high 7 assists, 3 rebounds, 3 steals, and 1 block. To me, he already offers you more defense than any of your other point guards, which I love to see, especially as like the change of pace guy off the bench. You know, this has been a pretty pro Jared Butler podcast since them picking him up. And I think that's making them look really good. I would have liked to see Jared Butler be the guy. Like, so they had him on a two-way contract and Eugene Amarui on a two-year contract or on a two-way contract. And they gave Amarui a two-year deal. I would have loved to see that two-year deal go to Butler because I think he's more a guy who could fit into your long-term plan as a cheaper guy. Whereas there are kind of more Amaruis out there than there are Butlers. That was just sort of my take, but either way, I think Butler's earned himself a spot on the roster for next season.
Yeah, I think it should have went to Amarui, to Butler as well. I mean, to me, Butler is a coach's point guard.
Yeah, right. You'd enjoy having one of him on your team.
Yeah, you need a coach. Every team need a coach's point guard.
Mm-hmm.
When everything goes awry, when Poole goes, you know, out of sync, like he can do. When Ty is maybe, you know, out the game or something going on and I need to gain back control of my team and of my offense. And now I need to micromanage the offense, right? To get everything. I want Butler out there.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I'm with it.
So I agree with you that two way should have went to Butler because I don't understand Amarui's upside.
There really isn't any. Yeah, he's another Gill. He's younger Anthony Gill, like honestly.
Yeah, but he's undersized.
Yeah, I agree.
He's undersized, so he's undersized. He's way too small to be a big.
Yeah, he just runs real hard. That's it.
And work and way too big man-minded to be anything else.
Yep. Yeah, he's a small ball, a very small ball five.
Yeah. Right. Yes, yeah, so like, you can't even name me a lot of those in the NBA because there's no need for them.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
So, you know, I like nothing against him. I like his hustle. I like the physicalness. He did a good job when he was playing. He had guarding Giannis though a few times. Giannis couldn't do anything with him.
Yeah,
which is that's his specialty. That aggressive, like 1-5 defender, drawing fouls type of guy. But
he's pretty mobile, yeah.
Mobile, but I mean, other than that, like, he really doesn't fit in any particular space.
He's also 27 years old, so the chances of him improving are, you know, if he were 22, I think this would be a slightly different conversation for me where I'd be willing to see, like, okay, maybe there are a little more wing skills there, but, you know, I think we got a pretty good sense for who he's going to be. Maybe he makes some incremental improvements, but again, that to me still, he maxes out as like the last guy on your bench. And I don't know why you needed to give that guy a 2-year deal.
You remind me of a modern day Anthony Mason guy, rest his soul, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know what that type of player fit in this modern game.
That's true. In the and chat,
Anthony Mason was more skilled than he is.
Oh yeah. And probably more athletic too, I would say for sure. Locked on Law said the Wizards love their tweeners. Yeah. Can't argue with that. There's always one guy on the roster that you're like, probably wouldn't be on a lot of other rosters in the league just because of his size. So Harp asked us, do we have the point guard of the future in Jordan Poole on our roster here? And then one of the other questions we got, basically, it never makes no sense, asked us. He said, it seems like Gil is a critical part of this team's vibe. Lack of explosion is the ultimate vet. They probably keep him. But it's clear that Jared Butler deserves a roster spot. And he mentioned the signing of Gino Amarui and how they have two more draft picks coming up. So it's like, how do you start to manage the end of the roster here with guys like this? Like, you can't keep everybody of the Jared Butlers. Do you bring Tyus back and now you have three spots used up for point guards? Like, I guess, you got to start clearing some spots here for some of your young guys in this year's draft. So any thoughts on guys you would be maybe willing to move on from at this point?
I mean, honestly, first of all, you got to do all your guys like did Tristan. Put them on the board.
Yeah.
Let's get a real evaluation. Sure. A real time. Mm-hmm. You know, what worse can we do?
Yeah.
Other than that, because, I mean, at the end of the day, those are spots that's being unused right now. I mean, you're not utilizing the kids that's on there, really, the players that's on there. So, to me, if I'm going to fill those spots, it's going to be players that I can have utilization with.
Yep.
So, let me say, all right, we're keeping two. Whatever two we're going to keep, we're going to keep two. So, let's go, you know, let's make sure we give them a platform. We can see them all, and the best two win.
Mm-hmm.
And still is not safe.
Right, exactly.
You know, if I can get something pepped up. But, you know, you don't want to just feel it because you can. You want to feel it with something to have some emphasis within the team. Somewhere it serves a purpose.
Yeah, fills a void and also maybe has some upside. Those are the things I would be focused on.
Yeah.
Noel asked in the chat, are we saying they should dump Anthony Gill for Amarui? No, I'm just saying there's only so many spots you can afford to give to guys that will never be more than like 10th, 12th men. And the Wizards have a lot of 10th, 12th men. At some point, you got to start kind of thinning the herd a little bit here.
I mean, what purpose are they going to serve?
I mean, bodies in practice. I
mean, we're not saying dump them, but we're saying replace them. Yes, we are.
Yeah.
I mean, if we get something better, we need to, that's those are two that we, you know, this, the reason they're playing because they're useful.
Yeah.
So we're not saying they're not useful.
Sure.
They're useful in situations when everybody's on the injury reserve list, you know, injury list, right? Now they're useful. So yeah, they're the next best useful option, but they don't mean it's the best option we can have.
Right. They're 10th, 12th men, maxing out as 10th, 12th men. You need your 10th, 12th men to be guys that have potential to be 7th, 8th, 9th men. And
exactly.
There's just not enough of that. Like, I was probably a good enough time to throw this in here. I went to the Capital City Go-Go's playoff game the other night, and they played the Long Island Nets. And if you put probably the 10 most talented players in that game, I would say 8 of them were on the Go-Go roster. But the two guys on the Nets in Jacob Gilliard, who's an undersized point guard, if he were 3 inches taller, he'd probably be like a starting point guard somewhere in the league right now. And then maybe like 5 inches taller. But Keon Johnson, that was a first round draft. I think he went in the first round. Just crazy athlete who's finally learning how to shoot. And it's like, okay, both of these guys, the way they're playing, I could envision them being on an NBA bench somewhere and spotting in for a team. Looking at the Wizards team, they had a lot of guys that are like the really good G League guys, but it probably doesn't ever translate to them producing on an NBA court. Like Jules Bernard in that game had almost a 20-point triple-double. The problem is he also almost had a 20-point quadruple-double with 9 turnovers. So he needed a lot of like reps and shot attempts and a lot of usage, and he scores at the G League level, but no one's going to give him that ball enough to do that effectively at the NBA level. He's not super athletic. He's not a knockdown shooter, not a great ball handler. Like, he's just kind of solid. And I think there's a lot of those kind of guys. You've got Hamidou Diallo, the top 1% athlete, but he's a 6'4" power forward, basically, who doesn't shoot. It's hard to translate. You've got RJ Hampton, crazy athletic, not really a point guard, can't really shoot. There's just like a whole bunch of those dudes. And to me, it's like the reason you have a G League team at this point is you should be filling it with as many possible guys who could maybe turn into real NBA players for you somewhere down the road. It's like, yeah, you had a good G League team, but what'd it do for you? Still lost in the first round of the G League playoffs anyway. And by the way, Jihadi, if you had seen the end of this game, it would break you. Because like, as somebody who actually like played interior defense, there was literally none of that this entire game. Like the final play of the game with 7 seconds left was Gilliard going the entire length of the floor at 5'7" and shooting a 3-foot floater untouched to win the game at the buzzer. And just like, is there nobody here that could slide over and just like dump truck this dude to the ground or something? Like it was just such a heartbreaking way to lose a game. But that was the whole game for them, was just giving up points at the rim over and over and over again. And that's hard to see. So I don't know. It fits into the theme of like, we got to start having some projects here with some bigger upside. And that doesn't seem to be something they're really focusing on too much here so far.
I hate to say it. I really hate to say it. If I can fill those rosters and I can find an equal player that has more versatility, I might go overseas and get him.
Yeah, I would be looking pretty hard at that.
Because at least I know he'd be more of a fitting player.
He'll come in and fill a role more easily.
He'll come in, yep, come in and fill a role. He won't be one-dimensional.
The only one from that game that I watched and I was like, okay, I could see this a little bit, and he's still probably another guy that's at best like a 10th man, was Julian Champagny. The other one, we have Justin Champagny. Sorry, Justin. He did some things. Like, he had a pretty good game. He let the game come to him. He kind of efficiently got himself the 20 points. And actually here the other night against the Lakers, he had 13 points, 5 of 8 shooting, 3 of 5 from 3, 7 rebounds, 2 assists, 1 steal in 20 minutes. Like, that's all you ever want from a guy like that. And he's also the mold of player that makes sense. He's 6'7". He's a decent athlete. He could play up or down in the lineup a little bit. So you get some positional versatility. I'd be trying to find more of those types of guys. The guy I like the most on the go-go team is still John Butler Jr. He's basically a 7-foot shooting guard who weighs 190 pounds. But he weak side chop blocks a little bit. He runs the floor really hard. He's got some touch. So he's like at least intriguing, and he may never turn into anything, you know, that can play at the NBA level, but there's something there that he could provide a unique skill set for. And to me, that's way more interesting.
I got to check him out.
Yeah. He's unique. I would say he's trying for the unicorn mold pretty hard. He's just way too thin still. Locked On Law mentioned Johnny Davis here, and I think it says a lot that we've been talking about the young guys on this roster, and it never occurred to me to mention Johnny Davis. Like that experiment has just failed at this point, and I think for everybody, you just cut bait at the end of the season, whatever the cost is. That's just, it's not going to work out. Like, we know that now. They're not even like really trying.
And he had a shift.
Yeah. They've given him some minutes here, and really nothing to stand out. Wow, which is tough for him. All right, let's shift gears here a little bit, just sort of backing it out. The Wizards as a whole, the move to Virginia, which I think we were both kind of not in favor of, me selfishly, someone going to games, definitely didn't like that. It basically fell through. So they've announced that Monumental Sports has reached a new agreement with the DC government. In the press conference last Wednesday, Ted and Muriel Bowser, the mayor, said that the Wizards would stay here through 2050. It's a $515 million package to renovate Capital One Arena and all of Gallery Place, among some other things. And that means the deal with Virginia is dead. So, you know, selfishly, I'm glad to see it. Although it was hilarious kind of seeing these quotes from Ted about like, home is where the heart is. And I realized that, you know, DC is just where we needed to be. It's like, nah, man, your deal fell through because you aligned with some people who didn't think it out very well. But, oh, I've had this change of heart and I just wanted to come home. Like, shut up, man. Like, just, it's so disingenuous. And you either think we're stupid or you're like laughing in our face while you're saying it, because everyone knows that that shit's not true.
Oh, I mean, so I know. In the beginning, the entire Virginia play was to get DC to put up some money, and they wouldn't do it.
Yep. Not enough, at least.
So the more that they seemed like they wouldn't do it, the Virginia situation became more of a reality.
Yep. Agreed.
I still don't know why it was becoming a reality. It was something that he really wanted to do. Because at the end of the day,
them being able to build out a complex there was sort of what, like him owning all the real estate around him and stuff. Like that was the move, I think.
Yeah, I think, because that's where everything is going now.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the Staples Center, it's an event space.
Yeah. Chase Center, same way.
Arena with a big event space around where you do restaurants, you know, all type of things, right? I think Dallas, Mark Cuban did that to, is it still American Airlines Arena?
I can't even keep track anymore. Yeah, I think
whatever it was, he did that, right?
Yeah.
Even like football, you have LA.
The new Rams as an Amway. I forget what the new one's called.
Intuit Dome. Yeah, no, that's the Lakers. That's the Clippers, right? Intuit is where the Clippers is going to be in a big event space.
Yeah.
Right. Where outside of there's so many things around there.
Mm-hmm.
So, and what now is a big real estate move.
Yep.
So it's not just about the team, it's a big real estate play.
Mm-hmm.
And any owner will want to have that real estate play because it's so much.
Another revenue stream and your money helps you make other money. Yeah.
Right. So now, you know, they're putting money into this. And to me, it's not a lot of money. I mean, if you say 500 mil?
Yeah, 515 just for the renovations to Capital One and surrounding
Galaxy. It's for the renovation, right?
Yeah.
And they're talking about event space to help to fix the event space around too, right? All that 515 is going for that entire project, right?
I think so, yeah.
But, I mean, in the real big scheme of things, that's not a lot.
Yeah, I think it's probably less all in than they would have gotten out of Virginia, although they would have been building the arena for scratch. So I think that was like a $1.2 billion thing or whatever. So,
right. So that's not a lot when you think about what the plans and I'm sure what plans in his mind he was going for.
Sure.
That's taking a big.
Yeah, he settled, you know, for sure.
Yeah, that's a big settlement.
Yep.
So, you know, did he get what he wanted? No. You know, did the fans get what they wanted? You know, it'll be happy for renovation.
Sure. But
even if they didn't get them, they'd be fine.
Yeah. Wouldn't have bothered me. I don't have any problem with Capital One Arena. I've been to a decent amount of NBA arenas. I think it's in the middle.
It's not
the
bad. List.
Yeah.
It's still kind of, you know, it's older, but it's not for an older arena. It still feels like it's very competitive with the newer ones.
Mm-hmm. I think so. Although I was just in the Nets arena last week, and the thing I'll say, they went like a little smaller. It felt like, I think it's like 17,000 as opposed to like whatever 20, 21 or whatever Capital One maxes out at. And I'm exactly 6 feet tall. And when I sit in the seats at Capital One Arena, I've got to tilt my legs just like a little bit, you know, just to fit around the cup holders. I had like a solid 4 or 5 inches of extra knee room. In the Nets arena, it was beautiful. I mean, we were camped out for the whole day for the first round of the NCAA tournament. I was just comfortable. I was more like, it was just a little bit more comfortable, and that went a long way. So I don't know. Maybe that's part of the renovation.
Consider comfort now.
Yeah, you know? They should.
I mean, you got to, because a lot of people can't fit in that arena. Some it's certain arenas I won't go to because I'm like, just be too comfortable, sit down the whole time. Even if I got to get a corner seat.
Yeah, we got to be in the aisle or something, right?
Impossible. There's too many things you have to do. So,
yep.
You know, so yeah, when they consider comfort, that's really good. And most of those new arenas, that's part of it.
Mm-hmm. It's just, I don't know. It's sad that the whole thing had to play out this way. It's clearly a money play, and I get it. Like, it's a business. It's Ted's right to do that with his business. You know, at the end of the day, I'm happy that they're staying. It does sort of just like, there's like a little bit of bad taste still. I think it'll go away, you know, especially if these renovations help them. The other thing about going to that go-go game the other night, when they built the Entertainment and Sports Arena, where the Mystics and the Go-Go play, and the Wizards currently practice. It's just, candidly, it's not in the greatest part of D.C. over in Southeast. So they had a really strong police presence the first couple of years. On every corner, you saw a cop car, multiple security guards. Even though it was just a couple blocks away, there was a shuttle that took you to and from the parking lot there. And now only saw, actually, I don't think I saw a single cop car the whole time. Two security guards that were sitting in their car. They don't run the shuttle anymore. And the walk from the parking lot back to the arena, half of the streetlights were burned out. So I'm a grown man at 7 p.m. in D.C. Like, I didn't feel that unsafe. But it if you're trying to build that, like, it just seemed like they've punted on that building because of this whole plan. They were going to move the teams out of there. They don't want that to be the practice facility long term after D.C. put $65 million into it or whatever. So now that they're going to stay there, and it looks like the Mystics will probably stay there, I'd like to see them kind of go back to like putting a little more energy into that facility, because it's a fun product. Go-go games are cheap. And the real sell is you can have your family cheaply go see a professional basketball game. Like, you could take a family of five all in for $50 for tickets. Like, that's half a seat at a Wizards game. So, but if you don't feel safe, you're not going to do that. So they're really kind of like killing their own product there by not sort of putting those resources back into it.
Well, they're going to have to now. I mean, I wonder how. So definitely he had to now sign a deal to be there for another however many years.
Sure.
For that, for the government to even say, okay, we're going to put this money up.
Yep, right. I agree.
So now, you know, it's all about what his long-term plans are. Mm-hmm. You know, and with the long-term plans, okay, well, you know, just here in St. Louis, when we had the St. Louis Rams, mm-hmm. and Stan Kroenke, owner of the Nuggets and the Avalanche and some team, mm-hmm. some soccer team, big soccer team overseas, and whatever the hockey team is, right, in mm-hmm. Colorado. Yeah. I guess it's Avalanche, right? Yeah. He waited out 10 years to move that team. But in those 10 years, the service started going down.
Yeah, why put money into it if you know?
Yeah, why? Everything just started deteriorating slowly, slowly, slowly. Yeah. And so I'm just hoping. And then after that, you're like, all right, now I'm moving. Mm-hmm. Got 10 years. I had my plan. We're moving to L.A. We're putting it around the farm, next to the farm, and then we're going to build a Disney World around it pretty much, right? Mm-hmm. And so he was like, I'm not taking this money and putting anything into this facility, anything into other than everything to just to make it pretty much generate income itself.
Yeah.
And just hopefully that's not the case.
Yeah. If you're going to be Capital One through 2050, so you probably can't bring the Mystics back over. So they've got to still play there. And he seems to care enough about the Mystics. So hopefully this was just sort of like part of the bargaining strategy here, maybe, of like, all right, I'm going to pull support for some of these things. And maybe the city's doing that too. But to me, like, if you're not going to use that, if that facility doesn't become your practice facility anymore, and the whole point, and Ted made this big thing about like, oh, we put it in Southeast and the Go-Go and the Mystics will help bring like economic revitalization to that neighborhood. They've done nothing to build up the surrounding area in any way, shape, or form. Like, literally nothing other than their little like walled off campus. So to me, if you're not going to get any value from that, like, pick them up and move them to Baltimore or something, you know, put them somewhere where it's still far enough away that like maybe it would help you kind of stretch out your fan base a little bit more to the Baltimore basketball fans that don't give a shit about the Wizards. No one's going to see them. Like, if they play the same nights as the Wizards, like, I missed a Wizards game the other night in real time because I went to go see the Go-Go. It's sort of counterproductive if you're going to try to build up that product. So I don't know. I just like to see
them. How was the fan base for the Mystics and the Go-Go?
For the Go-Go, it's non-existent. It was me and 100 of my closest friends watching the game there. And I think half of them were related to players on both teams. So not great. The Mystics get a good crowd. Actually, I think they could probably benefit from a slightly bigger building, but over the course of the season, like, I went to a couple games last year, and it was like Sue Bird's last game or whatever that she would play in DC. That was like the one sellout I went to. So come playoffs, I think, you know, if you could move them back to Capital One Arena for the playoffs, it'd be like a different story. But I don't think it kills them that much in the regular season.
What's the capacity of the facility?
I think like 5,000, something around that. But they were literally telling you, you have to sit in these three sections right behind the benches because that's across from where the camera feed is.
Yeah.
We don't want them to see, you know, we want them to see as many people here as possible because they don't care if the rest of the arena is not, you know, if it's empty because it's not on TV. But I just think just doing something different, throw 10 of the G League games up in Baltimore or something, you know, like get a little more kind of regional vibe to it than just putting them in a DC facility that you're not going to, I don't know, reinforce. So something to think about, Ted. I'm sure he cares a lot about my opinion on this kind of stuff. I think that's really all I got for you. Shahadi, anything you want to talk about before we roll out of here?
No, I'm good. I'm good.
All right, folks.
Denny.
Yeah.
Renegotiate.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Renegotiate after this season.
Yep. Yeah. If I'm his agent. Yep. I'd be talking about the extension here already. To your point, for the last couple months, he's been averaging basically like 18, 9, and 4 on 60% true shooting and just solid every night. I don't think the defense has been quite as good. I got to throw that one thing in there. So Denny fans get mad at me. Got to check a box for them and meet my quota. But yeah, I think he's been the best player on the team for the last month and a half at least. And at $11, $12 million, to your point, shit, how do you do better than that?
Right. I'm going back to the drawing board. At least I'm trying to.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. Have my agent call every day.
Yep. And every good game.
If you're not calling, if you don't have any leverage, get a new agent.
Yep.
I'm with you. We're going to work a leverage play somehow to get me back to the drawing board.
At least got to get my guy a better parking spot or something. A couple more perks here for moving up the pecking order. Yeah, that's a good call. All right, everybody. Glad to be back here. We'll get these rolling more regularly here, and we'll see just kind of how they finish up, and then we'll start talking draft and next season and all that kind of good stuff, roster building. So if you got topics you want us to, you know, cover the kind of the slow part of the year here, let us know, and we'll make sure to cover them for you guys. But as always, this was Believe in Wizards. We're brought to you by Bet Online. Rate, review, subscribe, and we will catch you all next time.
For listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.